Hey, Nerd Funnelers are back. This is Bob Shui. You're listening to Nerd Funnel, where we take all the nerd news of the world and funnel it into your more than willing ear holes. With me today is Juan.
Hey, buddy.
And we are going to talk some warfare today. We're talking about warfare as it's represented in new nerd culture across different types of media. Obviously, you know, it's an ever-going, on-lasting part of our nature of human beings is the conflict that we have to go for resources and ideologies and things like that, and how nerd culture makes us look at warfare, how we interpret it, because the reality of war is that it's horrible.
Is that it sucks.
War sucks. I mean, okay, aside from like sci-fi fantasy, you know, all that stuff, what is the best gritty real war movie or story you've ever seen?
Saving Private Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan. Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, definitely.
Where it has that ending that I always so appreciate. It's everybody dies except for the one.
And honestly, that's kind of the reality of it. It's like the hard part about warfare is that there's really no happy endings. Usually in like sci-fi, fantasy, you know, we get some sort of like resolution or some type of, you know, because we're telling a story and stories have to have some type of resolution. But in real life, sometimes it's a messy, complicated, bloody ending that really doesn't have a nice outcome.
Or, and sometimes it doesn't even have an outcome. It's just, you're just left with kind of like a void that there's really no way for you to fill. And I think, just thinking in where we are in time right now and the amount of veterans that are coming through, I think you can see it all through our society where people are having huge amount of issues just reintroducing themselves into just normal society just because it's hard to fix something that you don't know what is broken.
That's a huge issue. We can start there as far as, like, you know, veterans returning, because veterans are a huge part of, you know, any society, you know, they go to war, they fulfill a function, it's horrific, it changes them, they come back. There's a great book called The Forever War by Joe Haldeman. And it's actually, there's a series of them, but it's, he's a veteran, and he wrote this book about these Marines that go out into space and fight these far-off aliens and in distant worlds. And I was kind of hoping they may do a film or a TV show of this, because it's really good. But because of, you know, time dilation and space travel, so it takes a long time to get there. So he gets out there, and he's traveling at relativistic speeds, and they keep launching ships out. And so soldiers are getting there at different times. Because of the time dilation, they know the enemy's out there, right? So they go out there, and they're launching these ships, and by the time they get there, the war that the guys thought they were fighting has changed. And by the time they get back from the fight, the Earth that they're fighting for has changed completely.
Whoa.
So it was very much a commentary of Joe Haldeman going to Vietnam and not knowing exactly what he was fighting for, and then coming back to an America that didn't know how to treat him when he got back. So that was how he dealt with the Vietnam War. He wrote this story where he's going out and fighting this alien war. He doesn't know exactly why he's fighting. All he knows that he has to. And he gets out there, and the war that he was told that was going to happen is not the same war he was fighting. It was a different type of enemy, different conditions. And then as he's traveling out there in these relativistic speeds, he comes back to Earth, and it's 100 and something years later, and the social and societal norms are completely different. Is that normal around here?
No. I don't know. That guy seemed like he was peeling out in Just so you know, that sound was basically somebody back in my alley burning out in an alleyway, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
That guy's making war on his tires. Oh, man.
Okay.
But, yeah, there's a definitely, you know, nerd culture and media, science fiction, fantasy is a way to how people negotiate and try to understand warfare. And Joe Haldeman's Forever War is one of the best examples I can think of that deals with that. There's several sequels, one of which being The Forever Peace, where he actually gets back and now the war is completely over and no one knows how to deal with the whole society, a whole Earth machine that was functioning purely on the fact that they had to fight. And then when it's over, it's like, well, what do we do now?
That is just a trip just in general.
Yeah.
You might seem, I think you might have a better idea, a more educated guess than I would, but the amount of games that are being put out over the last, let's just hit the last 5 years, how many of them would you say deal with some kind of battle? I mean, obviously there's subgenres of video games that deal with all sorts of different things, mm-hmm. but the most popular games.
Yeah.
How many of them do you think have to deal with some kind of battle or some kind of war?
I guess all games, I mean, in order to be interesting for any story or game or movie or television, there has to be a conflict. As human beings, that's a weird nature, is that like things that don't have conflict are not interesting. And
right.
So war is the ultimate conflict. So invariably, the most interesting things involve some sort of warfare. And I mean, not the most interesting, but like the most exciting conflicts, a lot of times, the grandest stakes are usually in war, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course, first-person shooters, the most popular first-person shooters, Call of Duty, Advanced Warfare, Infinite Warfare came out the past couple of years. Those are amazing, you know, sold very well. You've got Call of Duty Black Ops. You've got Modern Warfare 3.
These are extremely popular games, right?
Yeah, and these
and, it's not just with a specific group of people, not just nerds. I mean, the military, I think, uses a lot of these games,
or something like it,
or
to
something
train.
Like it to train people.
Because I mean, all modern warfare, at least in the military, a lot of times is becoming more outsourced to a technical and video game like aspect. I mean, drone warfare. We're trying to keep soldiers off the battlefield by using drones and advanced recon, and the soldiers have heads-up displays now that have digital data in them, in their helmets that are not unlike the HUDs that you see in first-person shooters, things like that. And then the biggest tournaments, the biggest draws on Twitch, the biggest competitions are invariably some sort of tactical combat, either a first-person shooter like Call of Duty Modern Warfare or other types of first-person shooters that just depict realistic warfare, or fantasy warfare like Overwatch has been huge this year, or tactical RPGs like StarCraft or League of Legends, where you're directing troops or some type of combat units in an overhead strategy type thing. Not League of Legends, like StarCraft, Warcraft, things like that, where you're, you know, directing combat.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems it over the last 50 years, or let's just say over the last like 20 years, since video games have become a lot more fluid and a lot more engaging, and I mean the video quality and everything they put is just so much better. Do we as not maybe a culture, but maybe as a culture, because we don't have those opportunities to have those kinds of experiences. I mean, it seems like the further in the past you go, like as part of you growing into a man, and I'm just using quotes,
air quotes.
You being defined as a man would involve you inevitably going through something like that, going through some kind of a war or some kind of a battle in order to prove your manliness.
Mm-hmm.
Where we don't have as many of those conflicts as we used to, or I mean, like I don't like, you know, when was the last time that the drafted was enacted?
Well, I mean, I see. Okay, I agree and disagree with you. I agree that that warfare was kind of a rite of passage in the past for males. I think that's changing. I think that is now we have volunteer militaries in most of the first world countries. Of course, other, you know, some countries like Israel, like you're required service. For a couple of years, a lot of countries have like required service, and then there's countries like China where you just have, you know, they just take you, and standing military of like a million,
right?
I think one of the conditions of human nature, and look at it this way: just take the United States for example. We're always at war. There's always some war going on. Like if you look at the history of the United States, and we took U.S. history together in high school. You look at this, the procedure, of the country and or even the world. And a good cross representation of this is the Assassin's Creed series. So like he's always going back to, it doesn't matter what period of time, there's always a war. No matter where he goes, there's always a war that is going on. But more specifically, if you look at American history, and it's like, well, we had the American Revolution, so we were born of war. Then a brief respite followed by the War of 1812, the second war for independence against the British, right?
Right.
Then we had the Mexican-American War followed by and then all during this time we were war with the Indian tribes.
Westward expansion.
We had conflicts on the border with both the French and the Spanish.
Right.
Until we got the Louisiana Purchase. And then, of course, the Civil War. Right?
Right.
The big daddy with ourselves. And then we move into the Gilded Age, where we finally finished the whole Manifest Destiny thing, finished pushing out the natives. And then we get the Spanish-American War, right, at the turn of the century. And then we're fighting in the Philippines and in the Caribbean and things like that, this Manifest Destiny across, you know, the Pacific. And then, boom, turn around a few years later. We had a little bit of time. And then, boom, World War One, and then World War Two. Then pretty much since World War Two, it's been nonstop conflict. We've had the World War Two straight into the Korean War, then the Cold War all the way through Vietnam. Then, warfare has changed.
It's crazy. Now that you're going through it and listing things off, I don't remember a time that the U.S. has not been at war with somebody.
It's not been a war. I mean, I was born in 84, right? So during my years of being alive, we've had the Cold War, Iraq War, the Gulf War. We had Bosnia-Herzegovina in the mid-90s.
Yep.
Then straight into the War on Terror. And the War on Terror is a bit more nebulous and hard to nail down, but there has not been a time in the past 20 years where we have not been engaged in military actions at some point, someplace in the, you know, in the world. So it's not the nature of warfare is changing, how we do war is changing. But the fact that we do war constantly is not changing.
And then we have all these different platforms. War never changes. We're constantly being exposed to some kind of warfare, just the visuals of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a lot of what we see. And I think war, if you haven't been to one, like we haven't. So it's hard for me to have a realistic opinion about what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think,
well, and do you think that we like seek that out as a culture? Because those of us that aren't fighting, that aren't veterans, like now we have the means to virtually engage in warfare. Like, yeah. Do we seek that out? Like, yeah. is that a craving?
I do think that, and I think you can see that with how specific some of these games have started to become.
Yeah.
And how they're actually taking specific wars and specific battles, and like they are doing everything they can to put you as close to the actual situation as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's we can get the, I think that we can understand the visual effects of things.
Yeah.
But it's almost impossible for us to retain like the actual emotional conflicts that go through when you're actually in a situation like that.
So I'm going to expand on that point because that's a really good point. I think the visual aspect is way more accessible and visceral. The visual and tactile like aspects of war, like especially through movies, TV, and video games. Like I'll give you an example as opposed to reading about it, as opposed to forming the ideas in your head. So if you read The Forever War, if you read books about science fiction, fantasy warfare, like Game of Thrones, Ender's Game, there are the descriptions that you, when you have to form it in your head, are revolting. Like it, you feel, I at least in my experience, and several people I've talked to, and it's probably not the same for everybody, but it's you are repelled by it. Like the description of the violence in the Game of Thrones books, or of the pure weight of having to command in Ender's Game, or the alienation you feel upon the return in Forever War, like that feels bad.
So you're doing the actual mental exercise of putting yourself
The mental exercise of putting yourself in that position. But Now you go and play games, and you know me, I'm a pretty mellow, chill, peaceful guy. I mean,
yes.
I mean, I'm a lover, not a fighter. Would you say?
Yes, I would say that.
Okay. So, but when I play, like recently, I just finished playing Titanfall, or almost finished playing Titanfall, on and off there, which is a first-person shooter with battle mechs and guns and stuff like that. And I'm normally not a huge FPS person, but I really enjoy the game. I had a lot of fun, and it felt good. And I actually found myself enjoying the feeling of using weapons, of crushing people, of punching them with a freaking robot fist. It felt good. Now, if there was a novelization, say, of Titanfall 2, and you read, a passage like, you know, so-and-so, because you get to name your character, so-and-so used his BT-730s huge mechanical arm to bring a crushing fist upon the mercenary rebel, and he, you know, had a small quixotic smile as the 12-ton robotic fist caved to his body. And
it's
like,
going to be crazy now that I mean, like, you're just describing all these things, and I'm like having all these mental pictures, and the one thing that it just keeps me doing is like VR. Like, when it gets to that point where you can have that, like, that kind of involvement, because I mean, that's what virtual reality does, right? Like, it kind of tries to do the best possible job of putting you in that actual moment, in that actual situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it involves, like, so many of your senses that it feels real.
Yeah. But there's one, I think there's one sense that TV and movies and video games and even VR miss. And that is the formation of the reality for yourself. Because no matter how good the resolution of a video game, or the awesomeness of the cinematography, or the the height of the VR technology, I feel like when you have to form symbols on a page and process the meaning of what those words mean into an image in your head, there's something there that is raw and direct that is not skipped. Whereas when you have a visual media, someone's showing you a story. You're being shown, and you're not doing the work yourself. You know, everybody says like show or like do, don't show, or you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
No, I mean, and I think that the perfect example of that is something like Game of Thrones, where it's visually stunning,
mm-hmm.
but there's such an obvious disconnect where, I mean, after like all the seasons that I've been watching, it's like I no longer have that initial like shock that I did when like the show first started, like the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
I remember when that like it was just like stunning. Like I just did, I went through a small lapse of just like, I didn't really know how I should feel,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because it's obviously you are fully aware that it's, you know, a story that's being presented to you, but the characters, I had made such a connection to so many of the characters,
mm-hmm.
and them just being done away like that, the gore of it got to me as well. It, you know, I think that we're so used to seeing viscerous things, or like just bloody scenarios,
yeah,
that it almost at times seems like cartoonish. But this particular scene or that particular episode, it was just so bloody, and it just struck a nerve with me. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it was just because of the characters as well.
Well, I think it has to do with exposure levels. So you get desensitized, and you see this with veterans, people in warfare. They get shell shocked because of their overexposure to violence and horrific things, and then it changes the way they perceive the world. But you know, of course, you develop a connection to somebody, and if they get horribly destroyed, it's of course a different feeling than if someone you don't know or that you actively dislike gets, you know, horribly killed or maimed or injured. But in Game of Thrones, like, the violence, and I think as a culture, visually in visual media, we're becoming more accepting of a higher level of blatant bloody violence. I mean, you couldn't get away with any of this stuff, you know, 10, 20 years ago. Actually, just this morning, I read an article or a tiny blurb about how You know, the beginning, if you watched this first season or the first episode of this with The Walking Dead this season, are you caught up?
Yeah.
All right. So the backlash against the violence of the beating that Negan gave.
Yep.
To Glenn. And just in general, like, was so bad. Like, the reaction was so bad that they actually purposely went back and changed, and also changed actively filming scenes to make them less violent, because originally the season was going to be way more horrific.
It was already intense.
It was still pretty bad, but they nerfed it even more. Apparently, they made it lighter than it was going to be, just because the backlash, because so many, like you said, so many people cared so deeply about these characters. So it is a level of care, and I think warfare takes that away, because we're connecting on an individual level. Like, you,
right.
It's Glenn. It's, you know, whereas, you know, when you're in war, it's abstracted, and it's a survival mechanism. It's like, you have to be abstract in order to survive mentally. Like, cause if you actively considered all the people that you were fighting as human beings that you could connect to, you couldn't do your job as a soldier, which is why you get this alienation feeling. You get this, you know, a lot of the soldiers come back and have trouble socially relating to people, because they have to abstract themselves in order to do their function as a soldier, and basically dehumanize. And that's why, like, I think it's easy to, you know, make enemies in war, or like when you have, I mean, not make enemies in war, but like when you're fighting the enemy, like, it's easy to forget that they're people too.
And I think that's
unless they're actually robots or whatever in the story, like the Cylons and Battlestar Galactica or something.
And you know what? Like, I remember, like, from watching Battlestar Galactica, and I can't say that I had the same kind of reaction, even though the Cylons were the same characters basically throughout the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when they would die, it didn't.
Well, there was no death for them. They just get reborn. Right. They just get rebooted.
But because you weren't exactly shown the same personalities, right? They're like, they all had like some variances within their personalities.
Yeah.
And so, is it just the visual, like the you attaching the face to the person, or is it the personality and who they actually view themselves as being? Because, like I said, when you watch them die, it just seemed like, I don't know. It didn't seem like an actual any kind of death. Like you said, they didn't really die, so it had no real effect on me. It was harder to see it as a war sci-fi show.
That's an amazing point. I never thought of it that way, because, like, they were fighting, but in all the conflicts and all the battles that the Battlestar Galactica group and everything, all they fought, like, the Cylons killed, I mean, when they attacked the 12 colonies, they killed, you know, billions and billions of people, and in all of their conflict, they never killed anyone.
No, because they were all just...
Because they all just got regenerated. And the toasters, who gives a fuck about the toasters? They're not people. They're not things. They're just things.
They are just straight up things.
But there was 12 Cylons, and they all made it. Most of them made it to the very end. Except at the very end, a couple of them did permadie when they took out their regeneration hub. So in all of the conflict, the human beings got billions killed, and the Cylons lost like 3 or 4. That's fucking sad, yo.
Okay. It's weird that I actually was able to put that into a cohesive thought and just had that self-realization of why it just... I like the show, but it just didn't have that same kind of effect.
Oh, shit. Okay. Here's the thing then. So does that mean that if there are only 12 Cylons, but there are billions of humans, the value of the Cylon's life is higher? Because I think that's one of the things they were trying to make the argument for, which is why they believed in the one God. It's like, there's few of us, there's only this many of us, and there's only one person above us. Whereas, like, the human beings, they had the plural gods, right?
Yeah.
In that show. And there was many of them. I think that was kind of reflective of, like, where they were trying to assign value of lives.
That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't that nuts?
That's crazy.
Yeah. Because, I mean, okay, warfare is hugely based on ideological religious aspects too, where you place value of your beliefs. You know, you place your values in God, you place your values in the belief of the in the individual or the group or the family.
Or I mean, like, a lot of it, I mean, most of it is nationalistic. Most of it is just like, we just think we're just better.
Yeah.
We think that the way that we view the world is more accurate than yours.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so the basic conflicts, I mean, there's ideological conflicts. There's resource conflicts. Like, people just fight over shit that they need. Water, food, access to whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, even in those, like, those situations, that if we had the capacity to collaborate and work together, a lot more of those situations wouldn't arise. Think about just yourself and the conflicts that you've had with other people. A lot of those issues, a lot of the problems that you have with people is straight up miscommunication. You just not being able to fully understand, like, what that person is saying. And a lot of it has to do with people just not taking the time to
listen
and being able to articulate, like, thoughts and feelings. Because if you can't do that, then somebody can't feel what you're thinking, or somebody can't, like, view the world as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And even though in those situations where, you know, there's a finite amount of resources, like, it seems that some of those problems could not be as severe as they inevitably turn out to be, because then people start using their views and their personalities, not their views and personalities, just their views of the world and their self-importance. I'm just more important than you. Not that I have any specific reasons or talking points. Just, I just feel like I'm better than you.
Yeah, and, well, that's the thing, is it's a question of empathy. It's like how well you understand the person's point of view. And so that's the double-edged sword with liberty and freedom versus, like, safety and progress and order, is that, like, we could be, like, the buggers from, like, if there was perfect empathy, if everybody understood everybody else, and everybody
it'd be a
was
very beige world.
It'd be very beige and boring.
Not a whole lot of innovation, probably.
Exactly. And then you'd have, it's like, be like a hive mind, like the Borg or the buggers from Ender's Game, or like the Borg, where they say, like, they always say, like, oh, we, you know, resistance is futile. We want to bring order and structure. And that's the same thing you hear from all, like the Empire. It's like, yeah, oh, we want to bring order to the galaxy. You know, it's order. It's like-mindedness, and it's unity and uniformity, right? And to some extent, that works really well, right?
Yes.
And, you know, there is a need for that, but there's also a need for individual liberty and striking that balance. I mean, that's what America tries to do, e pluribus unum, right? So, I mean, look at America versus China. Like, China is a very – they value the unit over the individual.
Yep.
They have one-party system. They get a lot of shit done. China is very efficient, but they can't innovate.
They cannot.
And America is the opposite. Like, we don't get a whole ton of shit. Well, we get a good amount of shit done, but we innovate really well. But I mean, look how discordant we are. Look how
polar opposites. Like, just you within your family, things can be.
Exactly. So look how disagreeable everybody is. Like, I mean, when you don't have that unity. So there's definitely a balance. And I mean, I'm of the opinion that, like, especially when it comes to warfare, that, and, you know, different kinds of views on it, no one answer is the right answer. You need a dialogue and a consensus. And if you stay on the extremes and don't budge, you're not going to make any progress. But if you're all in the same boat in one unit and moving forward in one direction, you can't make good progress either, because you can only do one thing at a time.
Would it, I'm trying to think of, like, who I would struggle having this conversation with, where I would be in agreement with you, where part of, I mean, warfare and conflict is just part of the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
It is just something innately built into us, probably to our DNA. It is just something that we need in order to just move forward.
Well, I mean, like, you look at natural selection. I mean, something has to be selected in order for any life form to make progress. It has to go up against something else, and something has to be selected. It's survival of the fittest. There's competition. It's the natural order of progress. You can't just you can't have your cake and eat it too. You just can't slide forward without unopposed.
I can see the vegans just shaking
in the boots, shaking
their faux turkey,
shaking in their no animal product boots, their hemp boots. Like, you know, we just started playing Tropico together.
Yeah.
And, you know, that game is going to be fun because that's all about, like, we're going to run into a whole bunch of problems and conflicts.
And I liked how our my initial, because this is the first time that I've played a game like this, was I want to be as dictatorial as possible.
Yeah, don't you want to be a huge dick?
Yes. It's,
you know, be empathy is something you got to learn. Like, I play Nation States, and I brought this up on the first episode of Tropico. When I first started playing that game, my ranking and how my country was classified went dictatorial real quick. And it took a lot of hard work and careful consideration and a lot of difficult choices to select the answers to the daily questions that come up, the daily questions and problems that come up, to choose answers and craft a liberal society. That took a lot of fucking work. I mean,
I can imagine.
And so I think that's what's going to happen with Trump, because you know what? Dictatorial, I think, is easy. It's easy to just say and get in line.
Do it out kicking the face?
Yeah, basically, because force. I mean, because when you come right back down to it, and I think that's one of the things that video games rely on, is that the ultimate authority in any conflict situation is superior force. Like, can you destroy the other thing? And that's what the video games take advantage of. Undertale. Did you play Undertale?
Mm-mm.
So Undertale is a kind of a 24-bit, 32-bit era RPG type game, like kind of like Earthbound, that came out this past couple years. And it was revolutionary in the fact that you could go the whole... And so it was like an RPG where you make select, menu, fight, run.
Yeah.
You know, but you could play that game and win and make progress and develop relationships and actually play the game without fighting. And there are playthroughs of it. It's hard to do, but it was harder to do than fighting. But you can opt through the whole entire game. Every enemy you meet, you can survive the battle by not fighting. And
so how would you... Was it like a conversation, or would you have to give things up in order to not
have
the confrontation?
There was an exchange or a price to be paid for not fighting, be it social or monetary or whatever, but you could not use force.
Is it wrong that my immediate, like, the first thing that popped in my head as we were talking about this was, like, little bitch? Like, you play the whole game as a little bitch.
Yeah. See, why is that? Why is being a little bitch like a bad thing? Like, you say that automatically, there's like a bad connotation that it's not human. It's not manly, at least.
It's a subjugation, like just being. I'm not sure if I could be like. Let me say this. I wouldn't be comfortable going through life being just yes sir, no sir.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of having a life where ultimately I'm not given the choice, because that's kind of what it sounds like when you're like, you're just choosing to never have a conflict, and I'm always just going to be giving up whatever it is that I have. It's like, at the end of the day, how much are you going to have left?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, I'm alive. It's like, yeah, but you don't have anything else to show for it. There's no experience. There's no conflict. The idea of going through life without some kind of conflict and you just having those moments of dichotomy don't appeal to me. They seem beige, very just boring state of existence.
Well, I think that it's just the fucking nature of our reality is that the way things are in the universe, in life, is that there can't be two things at once evenly. It's the law of thermodynamics. Energy has to flow from one thing to another. It can't be evenly spread all out. When it is, the universe ends. That's called heat death. That's fucking heat death, yo. That's when the universe has, like, the energy is all spread out. Energy has to move from one portion to another. There has to be a gradient always. And a gradient and unevenness is the nature of conflict.
In the nature of everything.
And yeah, and then that evolves through all the different levels, all the way into our culture and media. It's like unevenness. Like, something has to be selected, something has to be in conflict, and there has to be resolution. But that's also how we measure progress. And it's a, you know, you, like, you know, winner, loser, and then the winner goes on to fight again, and if they win or lose, if they don't change, if they don't adapt, they have to change and in order to win again.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. The game that you were just talking about, like going through the whole game without having any kind of conflict, it's like, yeah, you can get through the game, but
yeah.
Then you've learned nothing. There's been no actual growth that you've gone through and yeah. have undergone. Like, there has to be a point where you have to be willing to stand up, and it's not just a physical confrontation. Like, you just dealing with emotions is like that. Like, it's confrontational. You having to deal with somebody that you having an emotional disagreement with. Like, you might agree with whatever they're saying, but the way that they feel, you don't feel comfortable. Like, there's conflict in everything that is around us and that makes us us.
And doesn't that make you feel like shit sometimes? Like, do you feel like it shouldn't be that way? Do you feel like a douche? Like, man.
You know what? And it goes to everything that we're saying, which is, yes, there are times where, like, I think about that, or I have a conversation with somebody who I know was a pacifist and who was, you know, just super, like, a down tempo, somebody who's just, like, always seems to be in control. It's like, wow, like, it's so interesting to be able to see the world through, like, through your eyes mm-hmm. and seeing how, like, there doesn't have to be a need for all these atrocities to be happening.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I have those moments of, like, no, like, you have to have those moments in order for progress to happen. Like,
yeah.
you can't just sit and wish people would be nicer to each other.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there are people out there that just don't want to be nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll never, it's not in their wheelhouse, basically.
Exactly.
And I think that's what makes conflicts interesting, especially in the stories, like, is that when the effort to understand the other side is almost bigger than the actual physical conflict itself. Where that does happen a lot is when you've got things like Game of Thrones, where it's highly complex, motivated characters that are, you know, warfare, where it's like, and not just outright physical warfare, but, you know, tactical, political warfare.
It's
things like that. Where that doesn't show is shit like The Matrix, where you're just fighting, you know.
It's very clear. Like, it's either this or it's this.
Yeah, or like you're fighting agents and like, what do they want?
They don't want anything. They just want to make sure that you just turn into a battery.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Although one of my favorite villains actually is Agent Smith, because he was the only person in that one that actually had an agenda that I think the antagonist tried to understand. And they didn't agree with it, but I think the most interesting conflicts, especially in stories, in movies, and TV, and games, is when the antagonist makes an effort to understand, and maybe even sympathizes.
And that's what Agent, like, that's what he ultimately, like, he has that internal, like, he has that internal, like, fight within himself, which is, like, he knows he's part of a system, but he wants to end the system.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's when you look at the best movies that with the best villains. Because I would say, like, you know, the greatest heroes are only as strong as their greatest villains, right?
Right.
So, like, look at, for instance, the Batman trilogy. The Christopher Nolan trilogy,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So, which one was the best?
Joker.
Yeah, right. Why? Because Batman tried to understand him, right? Ra's al Ghul in the first one, he was just like, oh, we're just going to, like, okay. He was simple to understand.
Yeah, like, we're going to give you, I just want to give you a fresh start.
Yeah, we're just going to reboot everything. And it was kind of a simple motivation and not really well formulated. It's like, well, it just needs to be done. And there's a lot of crime and that's bad. So we're just going to erase everything and reset the city or whatnot. And then same thing with Bane, although that was more a political tactic.
Yep.
And then, of course, with Talia, it was like a revenge thing. It was simple, and Batman easily understood those things. But with the Joker, like, he couldn't.
No.
And, you know, I mean, they say, you know, Alfred said it. It's like, you know, some it's like some man just wanted to watch the world burn. And, the Joker himself, and he's like, I don't know what I would, you know, I'm like a dog chasing cars. I don't know what I would ever do if I caught one. I just do things.
Man, what? That, like, I'm going to go watch the movie today.
And even the Joker in the...
he doesn't understand things. No. He's having that argument that Batman can't understand the Joker because the Joker doesn't understand the Joker.
Exactly.
Like, he's like, this is just what I do.
That's the limitation. Like, the first Joker, Jack Nicholson, right? And, I mean, not playing up the... doesn't understand him or can't nail down his own motivation as much as the Heath Ledger Joker, but he says in that movie, he's like, you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? And Batman's like, well, he's like, I don't know, I just like the sound of it. Like, just like no reason, no rational. And I think when the antagonist tries to understand, and then the protagonist tries to understand and makes the effort, when they don't understand their own motivations or successfully understand the other's motivation, and then are unable to reconcile it with their own.
Right, and it's I think especially hard for Batman because he has a code of conduct. He has his own like very specific way of viewing and wanting to do things.
Mm-hmm.
But he understands like. I mean, it's one of the things that, like, even going through, like, some of the Batman comics, it's, like, the reason that the Joker is who he is that he's like, look, if you don't kill me, it's going to come back to bite you every single time. I'm never not going to do this. I'm always going to be looking to just start shit up.
Yeah.
Like, there's no end goal for me. There's no, like, there's nothing that I want. What I want is to just see shit burn.
And that's way more interesting than, like, you know, I just want to rob the bank and get the money.
Yeah. Like, I want to have, like, a luxurious life. It's like, no. He burns a pile of money.
Yeah. That's why I think, and like, as looking at, like, Superman, I mean, that's why Lex Luthor is really the only villain. Good villain in Superman is because Lex Luthor is the same way. He's like, I'm always going to try to undermine you. Not because I want money or power. I have those things. That's not the deal. It's because I want to be your opposite. I want to be everything you don't stand for. Like, that is my goal. Like, I must undo you. And it's part ego, but it's also part, like, I can't stand what you represent, so I have to represent everything opposite. I'm going to constantly try to cancel you out with the other half of the equation.
Yep.
And it's a difficult thing to reconcile, but I believe, like, and also look at the Marvel movies. Like, the best Marvel movies that were out are the ones where, like, I always thought that Thor had the worst ones.
Yeah.
Because there's no real villain.
There
isn't. Like,
Loki... He's basically just trying to, like, prevent Loki from just being mischievous.
Not that Loki isn't fun, but it's not, like, a compelling villain. And there's really, like... Well, let me go backwards a little bit with Batman, like the warfare. Like, when Joker and Batman were going into conflict in the film, like, their issues were wrought large upon the populace. So, like, that gave meaning to, like, you had all these insane inmates rallying around the Joker, right?
Right.
And all these crazy people rallying around the Joker and doing his bidding. And then you had the police, you know, supporting Batman at certain points, right? You know,
yeah.
And especially in the third one too, like where
yeah,
it
right,
was out and out warfare. So when you can write large the motivations of the protagonist, the antagonist over the populace that's going to war, because like, you know what, that was a horrible film, World of Warcraft, because it was just like masses of CGI people going against each other for no other fucking reason than to just go against each other. Same thing with like Lord of the Rings, like Return of the King. Like, it was massive warfare for the sake of warfare, but in the end, the most interesting stuff wasn't the scenes where you saw the orcs marching up and throwing their attack towers up and doing that stuff. It was the personal battles. Aragorn when he stood up to the king under the ghost king. It was Or in like The Hobbit when Elrond and Galadriel fought against Sauron. Like it was those the big huge warfares, unless they can write large the motivations of the heroes over the populace, it just doesn't seem compelling.
So I watched all of the Lord of the Rings. I thought that visually, like it was a good film. I didn't regret watching them, but the way that everything was put out to you was basically you already knew the outcome for everything. Like the there wasn't a whole lot of, they didn't give the other side like any real personality. It was just like, look at these monsters that are basically just a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
And they're fighting. The battle scenes are cool enough, but they're only giving you the one side of things.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to root for somebody when you don't know what the other spectrum is.
Yeah.
And they kind of give you like a general, like, oh, well, they're just bad. It's like, well, yeah, like bad how? Like, what is it so bad about like what they're doing? And it's like, well, they're just bad and they're going to kill people. It's like, okay, well, it seems like you're doing that.
Yeah.
It seems like you just want things to go your way, and it seems like they want things to go their way. So, I mean, I don't, like, I kind of side with you, but I don't really see it as a, like, you having a war or battle, because it just, you're not giving me a clear idea of who you're fighting or what you're fighting for.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's either a world of men or a world of orcs, but who's to say which one's better? Because the orcs really haven't given the humans a reason why their world would be better.
Yeah, and I think...
Or the humans haven't given the orcs a good reason why their world would be better.
Yeah, and we talked about this at some point where my view on it is, I think that anytime you have conflict within any kind of parties or you have wars, both sides both think they're in the right side.
Yeah.
They both think that we're good. There's no one side who's like, oh, we're bad. Like they're not the Joker, which is, I think, why the Joker is such an interesting character.
Yeah.
I think that everybody perceives themselves as like, no, we're good, and you're bad, and like, you basically just go at it, and eventually history tells you, like, hey, well, you know, like, This is why this worked out, or this is why this didn't work out. But I don't think there's any, I don't.
Well, when you're in the moment, like, everybody thinks they're their own hero. The best villains think they're the hero. Like, yeah. The best villains think that they're the ones, and the most violent wars in games and movies and television. And television's not something, they don't have too many like warfare things on television. Too many war shows. MASH was a war show.
Yeah.
But that was more like a comedy.
Well, it was more comedy.
Yeah. There's a lot of shows on now, like political espionage thrillers, and there's sci-fi fantasy warfare stuff, like with Battlestar Galactica. I mean, in Star Trek had the Dominion War. That was an interesting war in that the Dominion were afraid because they were shapeshifters, and they knew that because of who the solid people were, they would never trust them completely. Because they were shapeshifters.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, we just have to instill our order over these people because we're never going to be safe. We're going to be persecuted till the end of time. No one will ever trust us because of who we are. So that was an interesting conflict.
That is pretty cool.
So, yeah, there's some good wars in television now that I think about it. But there's the best villains think they're the heroes, and the most compelling conflicts and most exciting warfare, and pretty much, I say, across the board in media, is when there's that attempt at empathy, attempt to understand, and there's that disconnect that's connected to the rest of the people that are fighting, and it just makes for a good story and reaches that point deep and down inside where we're all somewhere down there about a conflict.
Yeah, I mean, I think that throughout this whole thing, I think what I'm leaving with is, I do think that we are innately a species of conflict, and how it manifests itself is it can be on many different ways. But the most easy way for us to get those demons out is basically through warfare. Like it's us just having violent outbursts, and I think that some of the one of the reasons that we see so many of the games, or like, I mean, a lot of the games that people seem to talk about, like, have, you know, those kind of characters with that kind of conflict, and
there's varying levels of acceptance. Some people accept it, and some people don't, and that also makes for a very interesting. It's like the conflict over the conflict. It's like a meta conflict. It's like, can I resolve the fact that I want to be a warring bastard, right? Like, you look at like Rick versus Negan right now.
Yeah.
Like, Negan's fully accepted. He's like, okay, you know, I'm just going to do this. This is the way things are. And Rick's like, I don't want to do this. Like, he's always fighting it.
Yeah,
and but then he has to do it.
But then
he's always torturing himself.
But you look at Negan, and the way that Negan runs his society, because it's his society.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's well structured.
Yeah, it's orderly.
It's orderly.
One thing.
There's like people understand the do's and the do nots.
They're making progress. They're having power.
Where Rick is still going through, and he's like, he's just making up everything on the fly.
He can't get his house in order.
Yeah, the only thing he knows is like, look, in order for me to accept you within my group, I just need to know that you've killed some people, because that's just the way the things are. Like,
yeah.
You can't just walk around killing walkers or taking out walkers. You have to have killed people throughout the process, because we all are all inevitably shitty.
You got to be willing to kill for what you've got, what we have. It's a really good point. And like, and I think at the end of the day, it's like both Negan and Rick have done some horrific shit, but they feel differently about it.
Yeah.
And maybe in the end is the best you can hope for, is to feel, I don't know, the best / worst about the horrible shit you've done because of the nature of your conflicted self. I don't know.
I guess having the capacity to go through the spectrum of emotions is probably the one who ultimately wins, because through any warfare society, like, I mean, the end point is to be able to go from conflict to some kind of resolution.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, though, is there's rarely, like we said before, like, there's rarely neat and tidy resolutions. That's why I think the worst war films, the worst war movies and TV and stories are the ones where everything is wrapped up nice and neatly at the end.
Just thinking about another great war movie, Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now, right? That's the first one I thought when I asked you that question. You said Saving Private Ryan, Apocalypse Now is what I thought at first. Well, that being said, let's go out and start some shit.
Let's go.
All right, Nerd Funnelers, we'll talk to you next time. Until next time, you've been nerd funneled, and deal with more conflict.
Yeah, he just said, don't be starting shit. The one thing I know from being in fights is that everybody thinks they're a badass until they meet a badass.
There's always someone badder-asser out there than you guys. But be the best badass you can be.
That's right.